and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for July 1st.
July!
It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me from Tokyo is a very energetic Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
July. Wow.
Man,
not
already.
You're not July.
Did you? Never mind. I don't even want to know how you came up with that one.
It's probably...
It's out of a can of corn.
Ooh, very good. Okay, we'll get to the Texas Leaguer next, man.
Okay. Hey, on this week's show, it is packed. We've got an interview with Brian LaHare of the SoftBank Hawks. We're going to discuss Ballgate, a no-hitter, and the All-Star selections. And there's probably more to talk about. The bases are juiced. Let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, the season is about halfway through, but if you live in the United States and would like to see the CL pennant race play out in the second half, go to oneworldsports.com and find out how to watch Giants games live. Okay, so on Saturday, I went out to the queue and talked to Brian LaHare of the Hawks. And, man, it was really nice to talk to him because and he was really gracious. And I tell you why, because I had never met him before. I'd never even seen him before.
Oh, and but you had to ask, like, who he was?
No, I knew who he was. You know, guys, when they don't know you, they're not as free with the information. They're not as likely maybe to sit down and talk with you. And I told him it was going to be a podcast and everything, and he was really gracious, and he sat down. And, yeah, I think I caught him a little bit off guard, but he made the time to chat, which was very nice. He seemed very serious. I think he started to loosen up a little bit during the interview, which was good. But you can also tell that he's kind of in a funk. His body language, his verbal responses kind of tell you that. But I think it was good for him to sit down and talk to someone. And as you pointed out, he doesn't have a lot of fluent or native English-speaking teammates to deal with in the on the team.
He's got Igarashi there.
Which you said to me, you told me, he speaks, his pronunciation is really good for the 12 or 13 words he knows.
Well, let's put it this way. He used about 20 different words in 10-minute conversation.
Only 20.
Well, it actually was 10 minutes. It was the English portion was fairly short because I realized he couldn't understand what I was talking about, which is not something exclusive to Japanese speakers.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
But he was
that's
going,
true. What are you talking about?
Huh? What?
You could hear.
You understand me, right? So anyway, we switched to Japanese and so on. But anyway, yeah, it is a different situation he came up from. So
yeah. Now Brian's hitting .240. He was hitting before Saturday's games. I'm sorry. Yeah, before Saturday's games or after Saturday's games, he was hitting .240 with 11 home runs, 13 doubles, 41 RBIs, which is a lot actually, and then 26 walks. But he's kind of in a funk right now. He's not been doing well these past 3 weeks. He's pulling off balls. He's chasing pitches out of the zone, and he knows it. So hopefully he can right his ship. But the team is doing all right. They're getting better.
I'm sorry, he can write his what?
He can write the ship.
Ship, okay.
Ship.
The sound here is a little fuzzy. Okay. Good.
He can
just
write
want to make sure we're still PG here.
Right, he can write the ship. Hey, I haven't had a problem with the PG stuff. I think the only time I've had to edit out stuff is not for me.
Okay. Well, let's move on.
All right, well, I like some of the things Brian said, so let's take a listen to the interview.
All right, I guess this week is Brian LaHare, a first-year player with the SoftBank Hawks. Thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right. Now, you, unfortunately, you're on a team with a bunch of Latin-speaking players, and you're the only one who really speaks English. My partner, Jim, wanted to know, how are you enjoying being on a team where few people speak English at all?
You know, we got great translators. Our Latin guys do speak English. Some of the Japanese guys like to try to speak English. So there's been a lot of communication between me and the team, and, I'm enjoying myself.
I guess there are no native speakers, so how does that work out when you're on the field and trying to communicate with guys?
I mean, you learn a little bit of Japanese here and there, basically the small words to so they understand what you're trying to get your point across to, and I think for the most part, I don't really need to say much out there. You know, these guys have been playing baseball, and they have Honda as their captain at second base, who's right next to me, so really, at the end of the day, it's really, not my job to speak up too much.
All right, that's a good point. Now, you got off to a pretty good start. What was the key for you coming coming over and making all the adjustments?
I mean, I was just seeing the ball well. You know, I was standing in the bullpen quite a bit, watching pitchers pitch, and then just trying to hit the ball hard and stuff like that, and you know, hits were falling in for me.
Yeah, I noticed that you hit the ball hard. You did some damage. And what's it like when you're coming up and you're looking, you know, you're looking to see the ball, hit the ball, or you're just trying to make all the adjustments via video and trying to learn all the pitchers? How do you approach it?
I mean, right now I'm trying to see ball, hit ball, but for the most part, they don't really challenge me too much, and it's really just up to me to be patient and be selective. Obviously, right now I got a lot of strikeouts and stuff, and that's credited to me, not to the pitchers. So, if I can be patient and wait for my pitch, and when I get it, hit it, you know, I'll be better off.
Now, what adjustments have you made since the beginning of the season?
Right now I'm still working on adjustments. Basically, just seeing the ball. I haven't been seeing the ball well. I've been chasing a lot of pitches and those kind of things. Really, just at the end of the day, getting myself out. I just got to trust in what I know more. I think sometimes I know what's coming and I don't trust it, and I react instead of just waiting and seeing the baseball and trusting what I think. So that's a key to turning the season around and having continued success.
Now, when you say seeing the ball, you're talking about pitch recognition right away, or are you just seeing it out of the pitcher's hands?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really seeing it out of the hand well. I'm not picking up the baseball well right now. But I'm starting to each day, and I feel like I'm getting more comfortable each day. I'm starting to turn a corner here, and hopefully I get more bats to prove that.
All right, now, a lot of experts, and as well as, I wouldn't include myself in the expert category, but a lot of experts picked this team to finish first in the Pacific League, and we all know it's a long season, and it's not that easy. What happened at the beginning of the season, and what's happening now?
You know, I just think when you look at this team and you look at the minor leagues, I think we're built to win. We're the one, maybe the only team that has four or five guys in the bullpen that come up and down that are just as good as the guys we have, and we may be the only team that have three or four guys that come up from the minors and that can hit homers. I mean, you know, we got guys top to bottom, guys to fill in, and a lot of teams in this league don't have that.
Yeah, now, early on, what slowed the team down out of gates?
I think we all just put too much pressure on ourselves at first, because when you look on paper, you know, I think we have one of the better teams in this league, and I think sometimes that can get in the way of, you know, trusting your abilities and trusting in one another, the guy behind you, and those kind of things. And at some point, everybody wanted to get the big hit, and sometimes when you want to get the big hit, or when you want to do good for your team, it doesn't necessarily happen. So I think everybody started to relax more, trust in each other more, and we just let the next guy do it if that's the case.
Now, I call the interleague session the Pacific League feasting period on the Central League, but you guys had a good run. You won it. Yuya Hasegawa got hot. What sparked that run?
You know, when Akira came up, the number 60 came up, you know, he was a leadoff guy. He was getting on base quite a bit. And then Uchi, Hase, and Matsuda just couldn't make it out. I mean, those three guys were incredible. I think Machi went like 20-game hit streak. Hasegawa hit four something. And then at the end of the day, our pitchers stepped up and shut the door down late and held teams to a lower score.
I look at this team, and I think you guys can do just about everything, but when it boils down to it, is it a running team? Is it a speed team? Is it a power hitting team? Is it a pitching team? What kind of team are you guys?
You know, honestly, I think this is the one team that has everything. We got guys that can steal bases. We got several guys that can leave the park. We got several guys that can get big hits. We got good catchers back there. We got good pitchers. I think we have the best bullpen in the baseball out here. I think if we just continue to work hard, put things together, I think we got a good chance to make a run.
Recently, you've been in and out of the lineup. What are you working on to be more consistent?
I'm just trying to stay focused, keep my mind clear of the situation on the mound, and just whatever role I have each day, just try to accomplish something good for the team. At the end of the day, I know what kind of hitter I am. I think they know what kind of hitter I am, and I think they're just waiting for me to get comfortable, have some good quality at bats, and I'll probably be back in there every day.
No, I know you've only been here almost half a season, so it's hard for you to comment on it. But talk about what the players are talking about among themselves in terms of this ball situation and the commissioner and ball gate, we're calling it.
Well, the last ball that we were using in spring training was awful. I mean, I was hitting moonshots that didn't go anywhere. And then I think the ball now is more legit. But on the flip side, you know, at the beginning of the year, everybody really kind of knew what was going on. I didn't think it was a big secret. I felt like talking to guys throughout the league, everybody knew the ball was harder or a little bit better or a little bit more normal, I should say. So for the most part, I think everybody really knew. It wasn't a secret for anybody.
And what's the talk among the players about the commissioner? I mean, do they think that he should take responsibility and stuff like that?
I don't think anybody, I haven't really heard anybody talking about the commissioner. Nobody's downplaying the commissioner. I think everybody has positive thoughts about the league. I think the league is doing a good job. I think the commissioner is doing a good job. And it seems like everything's in place. But as far as people, you know, comments made about commissioner and stuff like that, I haven't heard one.
All right, well, good luck hitting this ball, whatever kind of ball it is.
Exactly. Thank you.
All right, well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks again, Brian. We really appreciate you sitting down to talk to us on the show.
Yeah, it's always great to catch up with Brian. And, you know, this is the third or fourth time. I saw him twice last week, so it seems like we're brothers or something.
Okay.
We're about the same size. Well, that's all right, you know.
If that's what makes you brothers, you insist.
We're about, you know, he's got more hair than I do, even with that funky cut.
I won't say who doesn't, but...
You can say who doesn't, but I know I'm looking at one.
Okay. What are you talking about? I have plenty of hair. It's just short, people.
It's just short. It's just not on, your head.
It's a full head of hair, man. All right.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, hopefully we'll, you know, it's good to catch up with Brian, and let's hope he can catch up with some fastballs and get on track.
Yeah, we'll hope so.
I wanted to know, the reason I asked about the English, or I wanted to know about the language speaking. I haven't asked anybody this in a while, and for a lot of native English speaking baseball players, you know, they come to Japan and it's, you know, the earphone is on the other ear, or for a, you know, lack of a better descriptive cliche.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's now the minority, and he's the one who's hearing things that he doesn't understand, and so much of the clubhouse language and vibe is over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering how that felt, and whether it gave him, you know, some extra perspective on his career up to this stage. But, you know, I had listening to his answers, which were, you know, which were fine. I guess, you know, that comes with the job of playing in Japan.
Yeah, and he seems fine with it. Yeah.
Yeah, and to be honest, he's got bigger things to deal with, than trying to write ball for, you know, in Japan, being the next Warren Cromartie.
Right, which is what you said, basically.
Yeah, and I guess dealing with the philosophy and meaning of cross-cultural clubhouse dynamics is probably the third or fourth thing on his to-do list.
Maybe not even that high. That's true.
Maybe even not that high, but, you know, it's an interest of mine. So, so that's that. I think Brian's pretty straightforward. You know, this is what I got to do, and I'm working on it. It is awfully hard to do when you're not playing regularly, and the Hawks are a team like, you know, like a the Hawks have a very common situation. They have a lot of talent bunched up.
Yes.
They've had a lot of talent bunched up in the outfield and at first base for years. And it's like every time somebody gets hurt, instead of getting better, the situation gets more crowded.
Yeah.
Because they bring somebody up who then produces. This is what the Hawks do. You know, they've become something like the Nippon Ham Fighters in that they have I'm sure it's illegal to have one of these, but I think they have, they have a machine that creates outfielders on their farm.
Just pumps them out, huh?
It pumps out these guys that can hit. Although I've known about Egawa for a long time, been a big fan. But you know, he just comes up and bam, home run. And they're going, who was that Yanagita guy who was up here hitting home runs? Forgot about him already.
Yeah, Yanagita, Egawa, Hasegawa, these guys have come up every time they've been put out there on a regular basis. They produce, they make it really hard for managers to throw them back on the bench, and for sure it makes it really
good. Fukuda is another guy like that in 2010, 2011. You know, it's just like they're just stacked with these guys who can really play, and when you've got somebody who's a DH or a first baseman, you know, they've got guys who can play the outfield, and, you know, and it gets kind of crowded. And now Willie Mopeña is back, so we got two guys basically looking for that DH first base role.
Yeah.
Although Willie Mo can played a lot in the outfield last year.
Right. But I don't know how much you want him out there. I don't know how much you want him out there.
And you don't want him out there this year, not with the other guys they got, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like what he said that, you know, they're built to win. And, that's why many of us can't figure out what's been holding them down since the beginning of the season. But as I said in the interview, it's not as easy as it looks. And the season is really long. And they've been coming on this month for sure. Partly because they played in the this month, meaning June, but partly because they played in Interleague and they had an opportunity to make up some games against teams. Because the thing about playing within your league is when you're winning games, maybe one of the teams you're chasing is also playing and they're winning for sure. But when you're playing in Interleague, there's a possibility of everybody losing except you. It didn't happen very often, but the possibility exists, so you can make up some games that way. But they've had injuries to deal with. They've had a lot of stuff to deal with. But I like what he said about they're built to win.
Sure.
But that means also that I wasn't sure why they were putting pressure on each other or putting pressure on themselves to try to do too much. Because if you have that much talent, you know, why are you trying to get the big hit? Just let the next guy in the order, save for Toru Hosokawa, the catcher. Everybody else can really produce in some capacity and you know, you don't need to get a big hit per se. You just need to keep the line moving a lot of times. And I don't see why a team with that much talent would think, well, we need to get this really big hit. Why they're putting their pressure on themselves. I didn't really.
Well, for some of those guys, it could be a case of, you know, I don't want to be the next guy to lose his spot in the lineup to the, you know, the kid on the farm.
Yeah, I understand. And we always talk about that conflict, the conflict of trying to be productive, but also help the team win. And I understand it, but you know, winning games is the ultimate goal. So you have to do what you have to do to get the W. I don't think, you know, your numbers are going to take precedence over the team winning. So
no, but it can take precedence over, you trying to get a hit because you're struggling as opposed to you relaxing and knowing you're going to get hit if you keep doing the right things. And so you lay off that pitch that you think in your, you know, you have a wishful thought that you can hit it, but in normal circumstances you wouldn't go after. So you start fishing a little bit and things get from bad to worse. So
yeah,
I can see that mentality happening a little bit, but it's odd. But I think, you know, the difference with the Hawks as opposed to a team like the Rockton Golden Eagles is that with the Hawks, that kind of stuff is going to sort itself out. Eventually the team's going to pick up and just sort of like get back to find its equilibrium.
You would think, yeah.
If you're a team like the Eagles and that starts to happen, you know, your elevator's going to drop a few floors.
Yeah, I would think so.
Before you realize what's going on, because the talent is not as deep, it's not as experienced. So,
okay.
So I think this is something that they just went through. The pitching also had some iterations where guys who were, you know, who were trying out different guys in the rotation.
Yeah, they're still working on a rotation, and we expected that in a sense because they've lost so many guys from the top of their rotation the past 2 years, so that's no surprise. But they're still, the staff is the second best staff as a team. In the Pacific League at 3.151 ERA. So I'm not going to blame the pitching staff. I'm not going to blame the hitters. I just think that they're still learning and trying to figure out, find their way in terms of, that's why I asked that question. Look, what kind of team are you guys? Are you a power hitting team? Are you going to mash the ball? They are leading the Pacific League. I'm sorry. They're two home runs behind the Nippon Ham Fighters in home runs, 59. So they can hit the ball hard. They can run a little bit, but I don't think there's as much speed as Brian. I mean, this was my personal opinion. I don't think there's as much speed as he seemed to convey in the interview.
Well, I would beg to differ. I think they've one thing they don't have is they don't have Kenji Akashi up this year. He's not playing a lot.
Yeah.
When he's on the team, that's a fast team. That's a, when he's any team he's on is a fast team.
Definitely.
They do have Matsuda is still fast. He's not as fat. You know, he's 30 years old now, or maybe he's not. Maybe he's 28 or 29.
I think he's 30. Yeah, I think he turned 30.
Okay, he's not as fast as he was 2 years when he stole 30 bases. Honda's not as fast as he was. It's a fast team. It's a team with a lot of guys who are fairly fast, but yeah, are they really fast? Are they blazing? I don't, they're not, they were that team 3 years ago. They're not that team quite. They're still quicker. They still have good team speed, but they're not really blazing fast.
Yeah, that was my point. Is that I don't think they're as fast as they used to be. I don't see them producing with the speed, taking all those extra bases. And there are a lot of guys have been thrown out at the plate in the past two seasons, in part because runs were so hard to come by. Coaches were just sending guys, just you know, on the hope that maybe the relay wouldn't come through.
Well, but they're still the best base stealing. The Fighters are the best base stealing team in the Pacific League. 50 out of 59 tries.
Okay, that's
good. That's good. Okay, that's a fast team.
And the 51 steals, I have them for 51, or the Excite Baseball has them for 51 after Sunday's game. After Sunday's game. No problem. And that leads the league, and that team also leads the league in home runs. So you can see a combination of power and speed there with the Fighters. But here, I'm still trying to figure out exactly what I'm going to be seeing when I look at the Hawks, and I agree with him. They are the one team that can do everything. They can hit for power. They can take extra bases. They can pitch well, and they can hit well. So I'm still expecting them to come, you know, at the end of the season, I'm expecting them to be up there.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have the home runs, but they don't have as many home runs, but they're close, but they lead the league in doubles. They lead the league in triples. They do everything else. They strike out a lot, but you know they hit the ball, which is they hit the ball well, which is a fundamental, you know, the core.
You got to hit, yeah, you got
to
hit.
Yeah, being able to cover the strike zone and get on base is the core part of the game. So they do that well. There's nobody hits like them, so it's going to be hard. You know, they hit the ball, they field. Honda's still a very good second baseman. Matsuda is very good at third. The outfield's, you know, it's not the Fighters, but it's pretty good. So yeah, I don't see any holes. The biggest part is that, you know, after Setsu, you know, who's the next starter, and you know, it's just what Akiyama's been doing for a few years is just keep throwing guys out until the middle of September when he decides who's going to be his starting rotation for the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, again, you know, you only have to go five innings and they have lots of arms in the bullpen and they take care of everything. I don't see a problem. When it gets to the playoffs, yeah, I see that being an issue because you can't give up too many runs and expect to win the games. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you can hit through it, if anybody can hit through it, it'd be the Hawks. So,
sure.
Of course, they gave up 17 hits today.
Yeah, and they had an ugly one.
They had a miserable day today, and they lost that series. And then what I really liked that Brian said in the interview was that, hey, we knew something was different about this ball from the start of the season. Now, he makes it sound like they changed balls from the preseason going into the regular season.
He said basically from camp to preseason.
Mm-hmm.
He said that in preseason they knew it was different. And as far as I could tell from, as I recall from the first big press conference 2 weeks ago on Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
the balls were all switched out by the start of the preseason games.
Mm-hmm.
And that some of the teams through camp had already been switched out by the end of camp. So yeah, I got the impression that he's saying that in camp the balls were dead and then in the preseason games they were flying.
Okay. Well, that brings us to Ballgate, and I want to discuss that again this
Ballgate,
week.
Ballgate, is he still running Microsoft?
Running it into the ground.
Wow.
Actually, I wish somebody from Microsoft would come to our office and install a new system for our paper. But anyway,
okay.
They opened this independent investigation. It was brought in, I don't know, the commissioner has tasked this committee to go and probe the cover-up.
Yep.
Is that the way to explain it?
That's inaccurate.
Okay, what is it then?
Because you're assuming there is a cover-up.
Oh, yes, I'm leading the witness.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't do that, because one of the chaps here who's on the commission, it's basically three guys. One is, oddly enough, I could find some information about Mr. Zenzo Sasaki.
There are three attorneys, right? Three lawyers.
Correct. Three lawyers.
And he was a
public prosecutor in Mito and also in Kyoto.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also been busy investigating Tokyo Electric.
Oh, well, then he should still be busy.
Yeah, he is still busy. I guess it's because he's from Iwate Prefecture. He's 60 years old.
Okay.
So youth is on his side. Mm-hmm. And the next fellow is the chairman of the third-party investigation committee to, I forget, it has a formal name, which is about a paragraph long, is a Kohei Nasu, and he is a former Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has some history with these kinds of investigations.
Mm-hmm.
The other fellow is I'm going to say his name is Yone Masa, who's another attorney, and then Kuwata, not Keisuke, but Kuwata Masumi, the former Giants pitcher, is
right.
Sort of the baseball technical expert in this movie.
He's the aficionado who's going to tell him what was his comment, that if you're not a player, you don't really know what the impact of a low impact ball or a regular impact ball is. So he's out there to explain the coefficient factor of the new recipe for the ball, I suppose, and how it impacts.
He'll show them some videos of videos of all the home runs hit off them to show what it's like to have a ball that flies.
Yeah, this ball, I don't like this ball. Well, I'm just wondering, is this independent committee? Is this how seriously should we take this thing? I mean, I'm
pretty seriously.
It's not about going through the motions. I mean.
No.
That's the feeling I'm getting.
No, I don't think so. I think you have to ask is what questions. Okay, first of all, what are the issues? One issue is there are people who do not believe Yozo Kato, and he said he didn't know about it.
Right.
Okay. Now we'll just dispel any question about what we don't know.
Sure.
Okay. And the other one is, were they breaking any rules when they did this?
Right. Which, okay. I don't think they were.
I don't think so either. I think it's kind of a tempest in a, you know, teapot kind of thing is the thing. It's a shock, and it's a shock because the commissioner came out and said, no, I think the guy's just getting better swings. Okay. Which is the weird point. You know, he either didn't know or he was lying. Okay.
Right.
So here's the thing. These are the questions as far as I see them. One, is there hard evidence that the commissioner did know? Now, you have to throw out the idea that the commissioner should have known because we suspected it.
No, yeah, I don't. Okay. I'm not going to assume that he knew.
Right. Okay, so basically they have to look for written evidence. Okay, two, the only written evidence we've seen, you know, to support the theory is that Kunio Shimoda, the Secretary General of NPB, signed the contract for the new, you know, for the new balls,
mm-hmm.
not the commissioner. And I don't know what, and I think the commissioner signed the original contract.
Right.
Okay, in 2009, when they were going to change the balls in 2010.
10.
Okay. Now, the next question is, were any procedures violated if Kato didn't know? You know, what I think this is an interesting question, because if there were internal rules broken, then something needs to be done about it. Now, Kato was basically saying he didn't break any rules. This was something that he could technically handle under his own authority.
Yeah, and I don't think – that's why I'm so surprised that the fan outrage and all this stuff. Why are the fans calling in to say whatever it is that they're saying and complaining about? The league can change the ball anytime it wants.
Sure.
And it can make it a low impact, a high impact. It doesn't really matter. So
right.
what is the thing that is driving – this fan outcry. And
well, it's the awkwardness of the whole thing.
Well, it's the deception, and I understand that. But again, he didn't break any rules or laws or anything. It's just something that happened.
Yeah, the deception, or it's either deception or negligence, and just a lack of common sense.
Well, it's definitely deception. The negligence would be
deception by
whoever decided they were going to change the ball and not tell people and tell Mizuno, the Mizuno Corporation, not to divulge the fact that the ball was changed. That's the deception. Yeah. But is that a breach?
Yeah,
of-
again, this is another thing. So the players' union came out and said, "Well, you should select a new commissioner who will be more proactive and be more reform oriented." Which is like, listen, I want to tell the players. First of all, I have a soapbox here. Let me get up on it.
All right.
The players union.
You first. I'll take my turn. Second.
The players union is led around by the ears by a couple of lawyers who should be put on a bus and sent to Siberia.
Not someplace that warm, in my opinion.
well, they belong somewhere warm. Basically, they've spent when they started guiding the union. Basically, they did some positive things because the union needed to show it was serious. So they got the players to have agents. They did a few things, this and that. But basically now they've gotten into a nitpicking. All they've done is nitpick with NPB over the smallest and most. I know they've had some big battles. I mean, they did have an important battle with NPB over the who owns the players' rights, image rights. And they lost it, which to me is absolutely beyond belief when NPB's argument that we have a long history of successfully managing image rights in Japanese baseball. And I just, you want to choke on that kind of stuff.
Right.
I wonder if one of these lawyers were involved with that case. Well, that was a joke. Yeah. Anyway. The lawyers basically have, instead of saying, you know, here's an opportunity for the lawyers to say, look, we feel aggrieved. We want to shut up and go away. Instead of just saying, down with the commissioner, down with the commissioner, down with the, it's like schoolyard stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my impression of the lawyers. They're pretty much a waste of space.
Well, for me, my soapbox item is this, I tried to play it out in my mind, okay?
Wow.
And
that's a small playing field.
Well, it should be, the ball's over the fence in about 2 feet. But, okay, let's say Kato really knew something, or I'm sorry, he really knew nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that Shimoda was the guy who unilaterally made this decision, and he ends up being the guy who walks away and quits.
Yep.
That's one scenario. Another scenario is Kato didn't know anything at all at the beginning, but then he stayed quiet when he learned about the change in May, and this is found out by the committee, and he quits.
Sure.
And the worst case scenario is that Kato knew about it from the start, he lied, and he quits.
Well, that one is, I would find it hard to believe because of the one thing is that he's got so many other. The NPB is his most visible position right now.
Uh-huh.
But he has as Bob Whiting said, his credibility is off the charts, and he's got so many other irons in the fire that coming out and doing something, you know, blatantly dishonest and silly like this, covering up something like this, would be extremely counterproductive. You know, what's it like to be the longest-serving ambassador, Japan's longest-serving ambassador to the United States, only to have your reputation tarnished because you said, well, I don't know about what's happened with the ball?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm just saying, those are some scenarios that could come out of this. I don't know what's going to come out of this committee, but I did find it kind of odd that they used Masumi Kuwata as the player representative, so to speak, because he's so... such a loved figure, so beloved figure by society. Whatever he comes out and says, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the face and the voice of this committee, and he comes out and makes the speeches and tells the press and delivers what happened or what the findings are here. and people will just eat that up. I don't think whatever he says,
they do.
If people, if they come out and he comes out and says the commissioner didn't know anything, who's going to say, well, we don't believe you. You guys didn't do a good job to Kuwata. He's so loved.
Yeah,
nobody would say that.
Yeah. I mean, I hope when he does speak that they'll add a little bass to his voice, give a little oomph in there. Because he's such a, he speaks so softly. It's hard to hear him. He's so gentle. But
well, I do think there's going to be a fall guy. I do think the players want, and the owners, somebody wants some change to be made. And I think there's going to be some change out of it, but I don't know. But here's the thing that Don Nomura, I started following him on Twitter. And he was really funny. He says, hey, if they're lying about this, what else are they lying about?
Wow, that's an original thought.
Well, no, it's not, but
yeah,
I like the way he did it. Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. Well, what else are they lying
about?
He's
an agent. What is he?
Yeah, I know. It's
looking for leverage, baby.
I know. And agents talking about lying. Well, that's a first. We usually don't associate agents with being familiar with the concept of telling lies, so
just cluster bomb.
just kidding, Don. Well, he won't talk to me again for another few years. Okay, now, no, I saw something when the union came out. And he was saying, "Look, this is the best you can do about the union. Look, you have a situation which is not really crucial, but do something positive instead of just screaming for blood." And that's the side I'm on. Do something positive for yourself instead of just making a public show.
Yeah.
But again, I think the whole thing's going to boil down to what is their hard evidence. The players' union basically said, the commissioner said he didn't know. Nobody believes that.
Well.
Therefore, he must be lying. And that can't be, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know what they're hoping for. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to come up, but I'm interested to see how this develops. We got to move on. We got more to talk about than this stuff. And we're going to be.
You mean something else happened?
Else happened. We had a near no-no, and then we had a long-awaited no-no, if you will. Daisuke Yamai of the Chunichi Dragons, and I was so happy to see him do this. But you know what? I knew he'd throw one at some point. I think I told you that. I think it was in this. He had a near no-no in 2010.
How far did he get? Nine. He got not.
He got into the ninth inning, and Hayato Sakamoto led off the ninth inning in Nagoya Dome with a long home run. But if anybody deserved it, it was Daisuke Yamai. He deserved his day in the sun, and he got it. And it came a few days after. A 32-year-old guy.
I know, a 32-year-old guy who threw one pitch in the entire game he threw one pitch at 138, one pitch at 139. Most of his fastballs were 132, 133.
Yeah, this is Takuya Furuya. I kept calling him Furuno on Twitter. Thank you for the correction. And,
well, we almost had a Furuno.
Yeah. Huh?
We almost had a Furuno.
Oh, no. No.
Oh, no. Oh, yes.
No, you didn't. Okay, anyway. he was having the game of his life, and then he decided, this is Furuya in the ninth inning, to tie his shoelaces before the last batter, and that was Tomotaka Sakaguchi.
Correct.
Who then proceeded to triple on a 3-2 pitch and break up the no-no. So.
Well, it was a long, it was the, I think the eighth pitch of the at-bat.
Yeah, it was a long at-bat, but I don't know why he broke his concentration to tie his shoes. I thought that was weird, but.
Maybe they were untied.
Okay. Okay, so then on Friday, Daisuke Yamai, the man who was removed after throwing eight perfect innings in the 2007 Japan Series, against the Nippon Ham Fighters. And you and I were there, and I love this story. I love this story. And I don't know, it seems to me that you don't remember it the way I remember it, so I'll tell it the way I remember it, and then you give your version. But
you tell it like it is, John Gibson.
All right, so this is game five of the Japan series,
mm-hmm.
And the pitchers announced are Yu Darvish and Daisuke Yamai. Mm-hmm. And immediately I thought, okay, well, we're going back to Sapporo for game six. And this was the 2-3-2 format, so this was the third game at Nagoya Dome.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't win it there, then they have to go back to Sapporo for two games.
Uh-huh.
So this is also when they didn't announce the pitchers, and Chunichi skipper Hiromitsu Ochiai exploited that like no one ever has. And so I figured, and I think Ochiai was thinking, maybe in his wildest dreams, six shutout innings or six innings of one run ball would have been enough from Yamaya, and they were going to take him out. And as we all know, he's throwing a perfect game. So after the seventh inning, I went up to you and I said something to the effect that, do you think Ochiai is going to pull him after eight innings, perfect or not? And your response, the way I remember it, was you gave me that, get away from me, kid, you bother me. That kind
I was
of,
working on the game story.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, the W.C. Fields kind of thing. And I'm like, well, okay, but I think he's going to take him out, especially because it's a 1-0 game, and you know, the Dragons are trying to win their first Japan Series title in 50-plus years. They want to do it at home in front of their loyal fans. And there's a guy on the mound you really can't trust. So, you know, when the eighth inning was over and the ninth inning was about to start, Ochiai comes out of the dugout, makes the change. The fans there cheered boisterously, as they usually do for Hitoki Iwase, because he's the great save leader. So, you know, I talked about I always talk about guys offensively, those kick around guys at the end of the bench as hitters, but I feel like Yamaya is that way, that version of the pitcher, because he's there, he's never really in your future plans, but he's never really off the radar. And he doesn't get his perfect game opportunity. He had a blister. It popped. We saw blood. You know, the next day I saw footage of blood on his uniform.
Although, the pitching coach might have put it there.
Yeah, well, that could have been a training room incident that was created to, as like the Wizard of Oz, to blind you or to keep you from looking from behind the curtain.
Heard that line before somewhere in my past. Okay. Okay.
So what do you remember about that now?
Well, I agree. I thought, you know, why not go for it? You've got two games left to go. But in retrospect, you know, to me, it was a bit of a toss up in the sense that, you know, you've got, this is what you play the season for, and, you have a chance to win it. And, so it's a one run game. You have a chance to win it. And you have a chance to win it at home, and you don't have to play two games on the road. I would do what Ochiai did, to be honest. I mean, I was thinking with my heart a little bit at the time. I said, you want to see something that's so cool. But, you know, given the fact that it's the Japan Series, I perfectly understood it. I wasn't surprised when he did it, because I was feeling he might do that emotionally, but he doesn't do things too much on emotion.
Mm-hmm.
He's all about, you know, winning the game and doing the thing he needs to do and pretty much thumbing his nose at people who think he should do something else.
Yeah.
So it was Ochiai all the way. If it had been the middle of the season, sure, he would have let him, you know. If it had been May or June, if it had been September and they needed to make the playoffs, he probably would have pulled him.
Well, I tell you this, if he had a 2-run lead, I think, you know, if it wasn't a 1-run game, a 1-0 game, he would have done it, but.
Yeah, let somebody get on base first. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing about it was, I don't remember if it was the first pitch or not, but it seems to me in my memory, the first pitch that Iwase threw to Shinji Takahashi was a drive that in any other park in the Central League would have been a home run in 2007 with that ball.
I do not remember, so
yes.
I
don't know that it was the first pitch, but I know it was a drive deep. It woke up Iwase for sure. If he had any thoughts of any issues and not being ready or anything, he notched it up or ratcheted it up a little bit more for that for the rest of that inning. But they closed out this combined perfect game, which was cool. And I thought it was one of the coolest things ever. A cool way to finish off the Japan Series for sure, but of course, it was always lingering with Mr. Yamaya that he'd come so close, and it was a perfect game.
Well, with that game, he had a reputation as being a Japan Series, you know, one of these guys who just comes out of the woodwork.
Yep.
You know, sort of like, you know, the other team's going, who is the, you know, was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? Who are those guys? And that's Yamaya's been that way. 2004, he was a fringe. That's a guy who basically turned pro because his corporate league club disbanded. He had nowhere to go, and so the Dragons drafted him, mm-hmm. through some connections. That's a, I think it was Yamaha he was playing for down in Shizuoka Prefecture. That's the Dragon's turf down there.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, at the end of the season, Ochai was looking to give a start to one of the guys who weren't doing anything. And so he had Yamai and another player, whose name escapes me at the moment. Nagamine, I think it might have been. They did John Ken. They did rock, paper, scissors to see who was going to get the start. And Yamai won the rock, paper, scissors, and I think he pitched seven or eight innings.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically set him up for a Japan Series start against the Cebu Lions at Cebu Dome, and in which he, I think, pitched to six innings, I'm going to say one run, and he was the hero because nobody even heard of this guy.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Dragons have tied it up, and then Kenshin Kawakami comes out the next day. They had a rain out. They had a typhoon out at Cebu Dome. The train stopped running, so one day was canceled. And I think Kenshin Kawakami came out in one of those games, and he gave the Dragons a 3-2 lead, which they promptly lost when they got home.
Yeah, I was living in the States at that time, and I'm like, oh, they're going home with a 3-2 series lead. This is great. And then, you know, it's the worst thing that you can imagine. They lose two games at home and lose the
series. They did. Yeah, Matsuzaka came out like his pants were on fire on game six, and And Takashi Ishii was the MVP, pitched and won game seven. It's a great series, though.
Yeah.
Great, great series.
And it was a great ending for that 2007 series, Yamai closing it up, and then it was a great way to end it. He gets the ground ball on a comebacker and kind of runs it more than halfway to first base and flips it over. And, you know, when he threw his arms in the air, I thought, you know, this reaction is a little bit tempered because I think he felt like the baseball gods owed him one. And I kind of agree, and it was good that he was able to get it. And
yeah, it was a good, you know, he was, you know, unlike Furuya the other night when you're going, Furuya was basically locating everything. He had two breaking pitches really working. He had a change up early on, and I think I can't remember whether he started with a curve or started with a change as his backup pitch, but he had everything working. And, it was a work of art to watch him, you know, to see what he was doing. With Yamai, it was a little here and there in the strike zone. His pitches had good movement, but he throws a lot harder, so he gets away with, you know, he can jam people. You know, it's a little easier for him to jam people. He got a few scares. He got, I guess, four scares. Tony Blanco hit a couple of balls really hard off him. Masahiko Morino made an outstanding play at first base. I think that was in the eighth inning.
And Niger Mourner, yeah.
Yeah, and then he cruised in the ninth. And, yeah, good for him. Everybody was so happy for him. Probably the Bay Stars were applauded on the inside.
Probably on the inside. All right, let's talk about something about something on the outside, which is the All-Star voting. Now, players had to come up and had to make up for the fans snubbing people like Hector Luna and Matt Merton and Hayato Sakamoto. Why did the players have to vote these guys onto the All-Star team? How come the fans are not getting it? I'm very upset about it.
Well, the Pacific League, you may not have noticed this rule change. I think maybe a third-party commission is in order.
Oh, yes.
The Pacific League teams are taking turns stuffing the ballot box. This year it was Oryx's turn.
Uh-huh.
And last year it was Nippon Ham.
Nippon Ham, yeah.
And this year it's Oryx, and the whole bunch. Hikaru Ito was the number one catcher, and I like Hikaru Ito. We both like him.
Both like him, but hardly anybody knows who this guy is. I mean,
right.
Bump him to him on the street and say, hey, buddy, watch where you're going, you know?
No, say all-star when you say buddy, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, and a few other people. And unfortunately missed Aaron Balderas, but what's she going to do?
Yeah. So we don't get the best hitter. The two top hitters in the Central League don't get voted on by the fans. And then a guy who really should be an all-star, he's got all-star talent, Hayato Sakamoto, doesn't get voted on. But At least they made up. It reminded me of
third base was funny because Shinya Miyamoto didn't make the top three in the players poll.
Yeah.
And he was the number one fan vote.
And he always will be as long as he's active, I think.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I think he's just a popular guy. But, I mean, regardless of what kind of season he's having. So it was just like last year for me when Jorge Soso of the Dragons, at the time of the Dragons, was putting together this wonderful scoreless streak, and he was just kind of swept aside. And, you know, you got Hector Luna who's hitting – he's doing the equivalent of what Ichiro went over and did in his first year. And that's just getting swept to the side too. And, you know, I want a Luna meter out there every night. I want more for this guy. He's having a fantastic year. I think there should be a Merton meter out there as well. I mean, both these guys are doing well as the home run chase. And I'm looking forward to the way that, you know, seeing that play out the rest of the season. But the fans.
Calling the Dragon Chunichi supporters lunatics.
Lunatics. Awesome. Awesome. Well, they are because they didn't get out and vote.
If you catch up with them, they're going to need some asylum.
Right.
Going to pound some sense on them, Gibson.
So I'm glad those guys, and also added were Motohiro Shima of the of the Eagles and Yo Daikon, or Here They Come, or something.
Okay, he's in.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys who basically got on the All-Star team last year because the Fighters fans stuffed the ballot box, and then he was by far and away the best player in the All-Star series.
Yeah, he ends up winning one of the All-Star MVP honors. They have so many.
He won one of the peanut prizes in the first game, and then he was the MVP in the third game. He hit a home run in each game. So, so they're fairly interesting setup, and we're going to look forward to tomorrow or Monday, same day that as you're listening to this, hopefully, if you're prompt, as our listeners must be prompt because they're of high quality.
That's right. Well, I know for a fact that a couple of guys close to us don't listen until Tuesday and Wednesday of the week in Japan, but hey, people are busy. That's why it's a podcast.
Indeed. And the managers make their picks tomorrow. That'll be kind of interesting. Last year we had Akiyama basically kept the foreign blockade of players off of the Pacific League roster.
I don't remember that, yeah.
So we'll see what happens. It's always kind of interesting to see what happens. And we'll have, they've got to fill out this. They have 31 choices total. I don't know how many. I'm guessing there's about 11 or 12 on each team picked by the fans and the players. And then they get to pick up to 31. And then the last person they'll put on the internet ballot the way they do in the States and in Japan about 15 people vote for somebody.
It's the plus one.
Yeah, it's plus one. They could have called it the plus 12 and, you know, guess the number of voters and win a car.
Guess the number of voters. Well, there's one more thing I wanted to get to before we close up here, and that was the incident between the Eagles and the Lions on, I think it was Thursday night in Omiya.
Yep, at Omiya Park Stadium, beautiful little park.
Yeah, beautiful little park and an interesting little incident. Now, I didn't see the whole game, and I just saw the incident in which
Shinjiro
Koyama threw a ball behind Ryan Spielborgs of the Lions, and Ryan didn't take to it. What the heck are you doing?
Players have this funny thing that when a pitcher throws a pitch behind them that they're going to walk into, they take umbrage.
Yeah.
So what is it with that? Not wanting to get thrown at.
Yeah, what's wrong? The ball doesn't hurt that much, right? Who has never been hit by a ball before. But I saw the incident, and, you know, Spielborgs is screaming at Koyama, what are you doing? And then we had this meeting at the mound kind of a thing between both teams. And in the midst of it, here's Senichi Hoshino, the skipper of the Eagles, grabbing Nabe Q, the skipper of the Lions, Hisanobu Watanabe, grabbing him by the sleeve and kind of manhandling him, and then Nobby Q kind of being apologetic, but then after the Lions lost, there's Nobby Q in the dugout hollering at his team. You know, and I didn't get why, I don't know. And they lost that game. They've lost a bunch after that. They're hitting the skids hard here. They're under 500. I don't know what that was about, but whatever you yelled at him, it's not working. Tell you that.
Yeah, it's unusual. This is usually the Lions tend to get better right after they blow something. You know, I mean,
I'm not touching that one.
No, I'm keeping it PG. Right after they, you know, a few years ago, they had the interleague sewed up and they blew that.
Uh-huh.
And then they had first place sewed up and they blew that. Last year they had first place sewed up and they blew that. And usually they come on strong right after that.
Mm.
But they're, yeah, I don't know what. It's sort of like they're not going to bring Takeya Nakamura back to save their season, which you don't want to do anyway because you don't want him to press and feel he has to come back when he's not ready.
Mm.
But yeah, they're just kind of sliding along. They're not playing the line. I mean, they looked until this past week, they looked really good. They just had a really, really bad week. And it wasn't helped by having Hideaki Wakui on the mound any of those days.
No, he was pretty miserable.
Yeah, their ace is really heading for the junk heap.
Yeah, they lost that game 10-1, and they lost a couple games after. I think they broke the losing skid, their skid today.
They did.
With a win, but not a good way to finish the month.
Yeah, and they won it because the Fighters were worse than they were. The Fighters had won five games in a row, and their defense was picking it up and getting a little tighter if I call him Micah Franklin one time, Wayne Grass's gonna come in here and knock me upside the head. Micah Hoffpower predicted, and the defense is looking really sharp, and then all of a sudden in the eighth inning, they start throwing the ball around like it was radioactive.
I like that. Well, that's the Fighters, and that's one of the reasons that, you know, they moved out of last place.
Oryx is in a hurry to get there. Oryx.
Oryx is like on the elevator going down. So, but yeah. Again, all those teams are still kind of bunched together, so it's not set in stone.
Yeah, I think Oryx is right now is sort of like family domestic abuse rehab. They're not allowed to beat anybody.
Oh. Now we. Unfortunately, we had to hear that joke, but we did have a question this week. We did have a question this week, but we weren't able to get to it, so we'll try to get to it next week, along with the other questions that come in to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hopefully they are MP3s and we can play them on the show. Or you can leave us a comment on the Facebook page, which a lot of our fans of the show did this past week, and we were talking about some of the things that went on, especially the no-hitter by Amai. A lot of people talked about that. So, you know,
we should have a lot of things to talk about. We've got the manager's All-Star picks tomorrow and on Monday, July 1st, and we've got the monthly MVPs on Thursday, which would by my brain work here would be the 4th of July. That would be like our little independence party.
Wow. Some fireworks, hopefully.
Some fireworks, baby.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening this week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next time.
All right. Enjoy your baseball.
Oh.